Let me bang you.
I do let you bang.
Let me bang you, kid.
I let you bang.
Greetings, marriage and virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, forget Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Hey, welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. Me, Adam Hunter. I am in Mexico, in Cozumel, working on a cruise. So hopefully this works. I don't know if this will work. The Wi-Fi will hold up. Can't be any worse than Don's Wi-Fi. Don, how are you, man?
Good. I see you. I hear you. You have such a rough life being tortured in Cozumel with Wi-Fi. Oh, I'm so sorry for you. God, I feel so bad. You know, your life is such a bitch.
Dude, cruises would be great if I didn't have to actually like be in the ocean. Like the problem is like the shows are great and the beaches are great, but just being stuck on the boat sometimes is like, and away from my
daughter,
away from my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard was it for you to be away from your kids when you fought?
Oh, it sucked. It sucked. I was gone every fucking day. Gone every fucking day.
You were gone every day. You were gone every day?
What's that?
You were gone every day?
Yeah, I was training every day, yeah. 10 hours a day, you know, and then when you're home, you're really not home because you're studying fight films, you know, you're sleeping or you're eating, you know, I mean, it's just.
But even when you were in Japan, right?
Like
when
what's
you
were that?
But when you went over to Japan, yeah. how long were those trips for?
Those weren't that bad. Depending on the fight, you know, the Ken Shamrock fight or the Takayama fight, you know, because I was getting ready for Coleman, you know. So I went over to Hawaii and trained there, you know. So I get halfway there because those are such terrible opponents, you know. The magnitude of those guys. They're just such powerful individuals, you know. Ken and Mark, you couldn't take them like an ordinary fight. Even though in Pride there were no ordinary fights. Every fight could have been amazing.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, who did you have to bring into your camp?
On another show.
Got it. Greg.
I had my Rogan, my guys. I had Sam Sotelo. I had Randy Martinez, Rich Moreno. You know, I was full of Mexicans, man. Mexican-American compadres. You know, and then, yeah. You know, and Jeff, he was a white boy, you know, but my Mexican crew, they stuck with me for the most part for 20 years, you know, shit, they were solid. And I mean, you talk about La Familia, you know, they were my family. You know, those guys were Rich and Sam and Rainey, you know, and Steve Owen. You know, he was my corner man trainer, and you know, those guys are solid, just solid.
So Greg, I'm in Mexico. I'm at a restaurant right now, trying to do this podcast. How's the Wi-Fi coming in?
So far, so good. You sound
okay,
good.
Cool.
You look good.
Looks like it's lovely
behind you. So, all right. So you're on a cruise? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. I'm working on a cruise. My last couple weeks have
been your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, so it is Don's Wi-Fi, right? Is it Don's or mine?
So far, Don seems fine to me too. So far, mine's all reading pretty good. So maybe it's yours. Isn't downloading great, but you're uploading just fine.
Good. Okay. So here's the deal.
Blame me. Blame me. Blame. Blame. the white guy.
Not going to do it. You're not the victim here, Don. Not a chance. Yeah. You're fine.
What happened? Wait, what happened to white power? Where did that go? White power to white guy.
Don, you're amazing, Don. Only you can go from, that's my familia, those Latinos. What happened to white power? I don't know. Maybe you mentioned white power, and then they all fucking...
Okay, so this podcast, everyone having power, equal power, no matter what race you are or color, okay? Just for the record, Don is joking. All right, now, let's talk about the fights first. We go over the fights that happened last week.
Yeah, and if you people don't know what Don is joking, fuck off, okay? You're too stupid to understand life. You'll never make it in life because you're dumb.
Listen, Don knows I'm Mexican, and he and I get it. He is so nice and so genuine. He came to my shows in Tucson. We hung out afterwards. He gave me a lift back to the hotel. I love Don Fry.
He took you to a Klan rally. It was
Exactly. I didn't tell you. Yeah, we made a few stops. We had to get
introducing some good, solid citizens, man.
So anyway.
Then he dropped me off with the militia, and I had to find my way home. That's just what happened.
Yeah.
So as far as I've had a crazy last couple of weeks, which I will talk about, but I want to make sure since we do have decent Wi-Fi, we go over the fights first, and then we'll go over that kind of stuff. So the Usman fight. I couldn't watch it till the end because I'm on this cruise. So I was very, very spotty. The Wi-Fi, it was coming in and out. And I just, after the second round, I just gave up. I'm like, oh, Usman's got this, which I'm an idiot because I literally couldn't watch it. I mean, it shows you why MMA is the greatest sport ever, because if you're down 30 to nothing in a football game or something, you can't throw a 31, touchdown.
Yeah, that's true. There's no 31-point touchdown. You're right about that.
Or basketball or baseball. And I thought that Leon Edwards, people were asking who's going to win this fight. Look, I'm a fan of Usman, but he was a lot nicer. He was a lot more approachable before he became champ. You could see even in our DMs, like, hey, he was DM me, let's do some stuff together, blah, blah, blah. And then he became sort of this guy that was like untouchable, So maybe he was believing his own hype a little bit. And a couple things during that fight kind of.
Hey, let me defend him. We all do that. We all do that when we get there. Okay.
No, I think this is a valid point. Thank you, Don. I think that's right. This thing, you're only human. Yeah. And when you get up to the top, all of a sudden you stop making calls. Everyone's calling you and you end up just not, you kind of become, people always say you changed, but really the world changes around you.
Maybe. Okay, that's a little personal thing, but I understand it. I get it. It happens. The best people that I know are the ones that like remember where the guys that helped them out in like the very beginning, or the guy.
Oh, your fucking feelings are hurt. Your feelings are hurt. He's not calling you.
Yes. Okay.
He might call you now. He's not the champ anymore.
All right. Whatever. But there was a couple things he was doing leading up to that, of him, getting in Leon Edwards' face beforehand, while they did the announcement, not touching gloves, kind of forgetting about his wrestling, kind of becoming a striker. And Leon Edwards is one of those guys that is very poker face, can lead you into a fight where you think you're comfortable, and then boom, and doesn't show emotion. It's not going to get like Colby Covington where, the emotion comes out. And that's exactly what happened in the fifth round. But there was a couple of things in the fifth round that happened. Number one, going into the fifth round, Usman did look tired. They said this guy can go forever. He visibly looked exhausted in the corner. Also, there was a shot that was there was a low blow shot that really wasn't a low blow. Right before the knockout, that Usman took a couple minutes that they went in the replay like, oh, that wasn't low. So he was sort of a little bit I think he was also frustrated that Herb Dean broke it up because he was kind of wrestling his way to thing. And then all of a sudden, the fight ends, boom. And good for Leon Edwards. Don, Greg, your thoughts? Don.
Go ahead, Don. Well,
it shows how a referee can fuck up a fight,
Oh, for real.
And, my daughter said the same thing as to – Edwards is getting him handled the whole all five rounds, and then he threw that one punch, and that's all it took. And, you know, sometimes when you become champion, now I'm going to defend the white guy over there who's bitching. Things change. You see the world is different. You know, people treat you different, you know, so you may not train as hard too, you know, because you believe your own hype. You know, you believe how wonderful you are. And I'd have bet the world that Edwards didn't have a chance against Usman, you know. I bet the whole fucking world. But, you know, you get that one lucky punch in this sport, you know. And it used to be said about boxing, you know, one lucky punch. And they got a puncher's chance in boxing. Yeah. And, you know, here they got a puncher or a kicker's chance or what have you. You know, it's like that. The stupid thing that drives me crazy about it is submission attempts. A submission attempt. What the fuck is a submission attempt? You know, every punch I throw is a knockout attempt. So how am I getting credit for that?
That's a good point. Greg, thought.
I think what it demonstrates to me is something we've been seeing a lot lately, which is guys not fighting through the bell or through the ref calling it or something like that. They lay off the gas before it's fully done. And then, I mean, we saw this in the Landwehr fight last week where Nate the Train kept ending the fight and the ref's like, I didn't call the fight. Fucking keep fighting three times. Yeah. Then they have it in the prelims of this card.
Yeah, we'll
where a guy was he was jumping on the thing and like, I did. He's like, no, the fight, get the fuck back in. And then he lost the point.
Yeah.
Then
that guy, goddamn.
Wait, let's focus on that. Let's focus on this fight right now.
Then we get all the way to this main card fight. And here we are. I mean, he knows he's won 4.5 minutes. And all he's got to do is ride it out. They separated, he gets his little break, and then he gets kicked in the fucking head and knocked right the fuck out. He's like, finish the goddamn fight, guys.
It did seem also.
Don't ever turn your back on the opponent. Never turn your back on the opponent.
It also did seem that, you know, a lot of times these guys who are high-level wrestlers, like guys like Usman, who two-time, you know, I think he was the national champion in Division II. He tried out for the Olympics, trained at the Olympic Training Center. They go up against guys from England who they know they're better wrestlers than, and they stop wrestling. Usman became the striker. And then when he got taken down, he was like, holy shit. And then a lot of times, you know, Edwards defended the takedown. It's like, seems like a lot of these times these guys in training camp, especially wrestlers, they fall in love with their striking and they stop doing what got them there. And that's kind of what happened. It seems like Usman wasn't that successful. He was successful in a lot of his takedowns, but he could have been a lot more successful in his takedowns if he would have actually focused on wrestling. These guys get confident. They go, I'm going up to a guy from England. They don't wrestle in England. And they just forget that, yeah, maybe he doesn't wrestle in England, but he's going against world-class wrestlers. He's training in wrestling. And, I think Don is now wrestling with his – we're seeing Don's crotch now. I don't know what's going on.
I think Don's wrestling with gravity right now.
But
I may have to get off the phone. My nurse is here.
Oh, okay.
I think I have to go check. I'll call you back.
All right. So now a couple things.
Now that's classic Don Brack.
A couple things about this fight. First of all, and by the way, you know, Usman has gotten back to me a couple times. He doesn't reach out as much as he used to. Don't think I'm being complaining. I get it. The guy's very, very busy. But, you know, I don't want to come across as a little bitch. Oh, you don't talk to me anymore. I get it. Maybe I am coming across like that. If I am, I apologize. I'm better than that. Anyway, what's the name? Now, I got to give a shout out to Leon Edwards' corner, because sometimes your corner needs to give you strategic advice. Like, hey, you know, switch kick onto this, you know, he's dropping the hands. And other times he needs to give you just
motivational advice.
And that's exactly what he needed to do. He knew that, like, listen, don't let him bully you. This is it. Get your fucking head out of your ass. Come on, Rock. It was something that it was like probably the best cornering I've ever seen. And it worked. It worked, obviously, because Leon didn't quit. And, you know, was in it the whole time. And so shout out to that corner. You know, Leon kept switching stances, which was, I think, also frustrating. I think Usman got a little complacent, and he still almost blocked a kick. Like, the kick landed right above here. It was actually, but it was awesome. Now, going forward, Leon says he wants to fight Masvidal next. That's
what? Why? He wants to defend it. You know, hey, listen, you know, we can call sprinkles and get you a cupcake if that's what you're looking for, Leon. Jesus fucking Christ, man. No, next up is Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards 3. World War 3 is next. That was the one thing we all knew after this fight was, well, they got to do it again. You know?
And also, but the thing is, because Masvidal did give him that, like, that he punched him 3 times in England. Remember the three-piece combo that was, like, after? Remember they got into a scuffle back then? But still, Masvidal hasn't won a fight in a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't even think he's going to beat Gilbert Burns, if I'm being totally honest, his next fight. So,
not a chance.
Now, if Usman can't make the fight, let's say he needs some time off, he got his concussion, whatever it is, I think Covington should get it. I think Colby versus Leon would be a great fight. I think it's a great fight for Colby. I think Colby wins that fight, to be honest.
I think so, too. And I absolutely do, too. And I think that's giving some to Colby. Like, here's your shot to get your title that you couldn't get from Usman twice. Maybe you can get it from Edwards. I don't know. I don't like that he doesn't have to go through Usman to get it. I think it should be Usman in a rematch. Usman Edwards 3. That, to me, is the only match to make.
Now, a lot
you want to prove you're the champ, Edwards? Beat Usman again, because you were losing for 4.5 fucking rounds. No, prove it wasn't fucking luck.
I think Usman wins the rematch.
Absolutely, without question.
I think, especially in a non-altitude, you know, not high altitude. If it's in Vegas or wherever it is.
I think it's reminiscent. It looks like the Nunez. What's her name? Rematch. No, I think, you know,
think
you,
like
oh
that.
Yeah, I think it does.
No,
I think it does. I think a focused, hungry, determined Kamaru comes back in there and just trashes Leon Edwards.
No, because Usman usually either he knocks you out like he did against Masvidal, or he beats you in like a boring way, which everyone gets pissed off about. Like he did against Tyron Woodley or a couple other guys against Damian Maya. It's like he doesn't beat the shit out of you.
But I'm just saying dominance. I'm saying dominance. He comes in and dominates him next time. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe. I think a lot of people are going to hop off the Usman train. Maybe he'll get focused again. What I didn't like was him bringing his kids there. There's this whole, I understand wanting to have your kids watch you succeed. But when I see a 5-year-old girl or however old she is, watch her father get head kicked and cry and someone's holding her, it's just sort of like that's gonna fuck the kid up for life.
Yeah, there's some careers you just don't want your children doing. Comedian, fighter, and stripper. Those are the three jobs.
And then cop.
There's no bring your child to work day for that.
That's a funny bit. That should be an actual bit. You should write that bit. That's a good joke. That's a really good joke.
You don't want your kids in the audience for those jobs. You know.
Now, a lot of people are posting the memes of Usman getting knocked out with his eyes open. And I don't understand that. Like, I don't know. I know maybe some people think it's funny. And some fighters like Tyron Woodley, they made a contest out of it. But I just don't like the fact of seeing somebody knock the fuck out. It's somebody who, you know, I look up to, I respect, I have such admiration.
Oh, come on.
No, I don't like it.
Puss. It's one thing if it's a random person on the street. It's another thing when this is their job and part of their job sometimes getting
knocked
the
like
fuck out.
I don't like the funny memes. I get it. I'm not a fan.
But unfortunately, this is the world we live in. This is the social media world we live in.
But like Conor McGregor posted it. McGregor posted it with some stuff. Jake Paul posted it with saying, yeah, I'll kick Jake Paul's ass. It's just, I don't know. I understand it's a social. It's
and
a
he
social
would still world. Kick Jake Paul's ass.
I know. Even knocked out, he probably would.
Yeah.
So, all right. That being that, the next fight, Luke Rockhold, that's a fight I could watch on the ship. It was coming in, and I was cheering, screaming so loud. People were looking at me and walking away from me because they didn't know what I was watching. But that was like a Rocky fight when Rocky was like too old and was fighting a guy younger, bigger, and stronger. Dude, when he said,
so Rocky Five, Rocky Five.
When he said, fuck you, and then punched him, I mean, and then rubbed his blood all over his face. Like, that was like that wasn't even an actual move. Like, it was just like, I'm going to do anything I possibly can to annoy you and hurt you. And Luke Rockhold, man, I love Luke Rockhold. I liked him going into the fight when he was going off on the reporters, telling the guy from, I guess somebody pissed off Marlon Vera by putting a Mexican Lucha Libre hat on him when he's not Mexican. And it was the same reporter that Nate Diaz slapped. There's this whole, and he said there's a whole genre now of a whole culture of just being disrespectful, not even being funny. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I love
Alan. Well, they're trying to get a rise out of you because if they get a rise out of you, they get the clip, they get some deflected spotlight. Right. I mean, that's all this shit is. No. Is how can I get people to pay attention to me by pissing off you?
Don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of Ali G, and I loved when he did it. But he did it in a hilarious way. It was,
and like, it was a character. He was doing a character.
Character, but it was also like he scripted it, that it was brilliant. It wasn't just like, hey, you suck dick, and then putting a microphone to your face, you know? So Luke went off on that. And I tell you, man, Luke, even though he lost and he was out of shape and yada, or he was tired, some of those kicks looked amazing. And what a fucking badass. When he just said fuck you, or when he walked away and then threw, there was like old man Luke Rockhold is, it was like a Clint Eastwood movie, or it was Rocky. It was amazing. What are your thoughts on that fight, Greg?
I think the best part of the fight was that he retired.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean that because it was a good fight for him. It was a showy fight for him. You know what I mean? Like, it showed his toughness. He was a badass. He didn't walk out of there like, maybe, I mean, and he chose to retire. And I'm like, good, this is a good time to retire for you. I think more fighters need to know when to hit the exit. And I thought that was the right move. He's an older fighter. He didn't win. That's the other thing. When they win these fights, all of a sudden they're like, I'm coming back up. No, you're not. I thought it was a good time for him to retire. And I thought it was a smart move for him. And honestly, I thought what I thought was the best part of the fight was the fact that he took the time. He was like, yeah, I think this is a good time to make my exit. And I agreed with it.
I hope he saved his money, though. I know he made a lot of money modeling. Doesn't seem like the kind of guy that just spends it on shit, because I don't want to see him getting knocked out by Jake Paul in a boxing fight. Because Jake Paul even said that was a horrible fight. These guys are looking like a street fight.
Why do you give credence to
anything? And Ariel Helwani got into it with Jake Paul. Ariel got into it with, they started fighting back. I don't know why, but I hope he doesn't.
So stupid.
I don't want to see him. I don't want to see him go bare knuckle boxing.
The whole legitimate fight world should ignore Jake Paul. The more you talk about him, talk to him, Ariel Helwani addressing him, getting into a beef with him, only legitimizes him. Get him just don't even talk to him. Be like, shut up, fly. Get away from here.
It's hard to not legitimize a guy that's the highest paid boxer of the year, the third highest paid boxer of the year. I mean, he legitimately has eyes on him. It's not like he's just, but
listen, in every field, there are people that are terrible that wind up being one of the highest paid. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Okay. We got a lot of comics that ain't that good that managed to end up making a lot of money. So, yeah, okay. So, sure, but I just think it's dumb when you have, but I think it's dumb if you have Ariel Helwani, who's one of the most legitimate voices in fighting, commentary, getting into it with Jake Paul, who is the most illegitimate fighter, who wouldn't fight a guy because he's 5 pounds heavier than him, but has exclusively fought guys that were 40 pounds lighter than him. Fuck that guy for fucking ever.
You're right. You got a good point, Greg. You got a very good point. Now, the Aldo fight, the Merab Aldo fight, I think I've hung out with Merab. He's nice, like super. Talk about a guy that came from nothing. We had him on the podcast. He moved to Brooklyn, didn't know anybody, was like, I don't know. I think he was doing like working at some kind of warehouse or something. And then he like walked down the block to find a gym.
He had just broken up. That he literally fell down on himself. He was like, I'm going to get a revenge, buddy.
Guy came from nothing. And here he is, beating Jose Aldo. I know that people didn't like the kind of fight it was, but he fought him like he should have fought him. He wrestled him. He took him down. He held him. He grinded him. And he beat a living legend and arguably the greatest 145 pounder ever. And he beat him, 30-27, maybe 29-28. So good for Merab. And good for not letting the crowd, you know, decide how you're going to fight. Because you've seen that too many times. So, well, I got nothing.
Yeah.
It was an exciting fight, right, guys? Great. Now you're cut. So,
yeah, exactly. Great. Yeah, you fought an exciting fight and you lost. So, yeah, because you played to the crowd instead of winning your fight. Yeah, but to me, the big disappointment was that Jose Aldo didn't retire at the end of this fucking fight. This should have been a double retirement night, man. That's what this should have been. I mean, come on, Jose. Come on. This is it. Come on, dude.
But it's hard. But Jose Aldo will look good against a striker, against almost any striker, against these Khabib clones, these guys from Dagestan or Georgia, or I think he's from Georgia, from that, you know, Eastern
Europe, Western Russian area.
You cannot look good against these guys. It's very, very hard, especially if you're a striker and that guy's a wrestler, because it's a different kind of wrestling. It's not college wrestling.
It's bear wrestling.
It's bear wrestling. I mean, when I talked to
it's different. No, it's different.
Talked to Ally Aquinta. He said when he fought Khabib, and Ally Aquinta was a high level, I think New York State champion wrestler. He wrestled in college at, I believe, was Nassau Community College in Hofstra, I believe. I don't know. He wrestled high level in college, and he said it was a different kind of strength that he felt when he fought Khabib. You feel like you're fighting a heavyweight.
And so, let me tell you something. You can see it too. You can see it in their back when they get them down and they put the bear hug on them. You can see this whole difference. It's like they have a six pack back.
Dude, they don't go to, dude, they're schooling. If you're a decent, they're like basically scouting when you're three, and they go, you're going to wrestling school and you're going to school. And if you're going to wrestling school, it's, from what I heard, it's 8 periods of wrestling. one period of school.
When I see those back muscles, I'm like, he's never getting up. This guy's never getting out of this.
No,
because it's a whole different range of muscularity on their backs than any other fighter. It's one thing to have like the wings, whatever, but these guys have like chiseled, and you can see it. I said, they've got a six pack on their back. It's crazy.
Chad Mendez was a great wrestler. I think he was a D1, either national champion or runner up, I believe. And Aldo beat him twice. Granted, it was a prime Aldo, but and this
maybe that should be Aldo. the new comedy, MMA roasted thing. Hashtag six back.
Now the Angeluza fight, the guy that he fought, I never saw a more tired person in my life. That guy hurt Angeluza, and then he just.
Oh my god.
It was like he was sleeping.
Dude, the worst was at the end when Lusa's just laying on Fletcher and they're just fucking each other. They're just like romancing it. Like, I'm like, are they dry humping right now? What is happening? Is this right? I felt like romantic music should have come on. Like, they're just laying there.
Oh my god.
Set the night to music.
Or high altitude, you have to train there. I think people.
And you're right. Fletcher had him hurt, and in the first round, definitively won the first round. I felt, but then just had nothing left. Even at the end of the first round, Lusa made a comeback because he just that big thing, and really Lusa probably should have been like declared out. He probably should have been TKO'd in that. But when he wasn't, he recovered, and that was it. And after that, Lusa just laid on top of him, and they just dry humped for 10 minutes, much to the audience's chagrin, I'm sure. I mean, I was watching it just like, guys, can you at least pretend to be fighting? I feel like I'm just watching gay porn right now.
Not a lot of fun things happen in Utah. I remember when Dennis Rodman went to Utah, and he was like, man, everyone, he goes, these people are really weird. When he played the Utah Jazz, when Rodman is saying that the team is weird, that people are weird, that's when they're weird.
It is weird because it's all, everyone's Mormon and the Salt Lake, you know, they run the whole fucking state basically. And when you're there, it really feels like someone's watching. Like you feel like everyone's like listening and watching, and they know when you're like from at your stranger and they're like, oh, he's not from here. He's not one of us. Everyone keep an eye on him. We got a wolf in the fucking hen house. Like, that's how I felt the entire time. I felt like people were watching me through eyeballs and tubes. And, you know, it was weird. That place is very.
I did a college one time. I did a NACA that went so bad. NACA basically is you do shows in front of hundreds of colleges. And you do a show. And if they like you, they sign you up. And if they don't, you basically lost all your money, and you're down $5,000. You're up 100 or down $5,000. So this one, it was in Utah, the NACA, I had no, somebody booked me before they saw me, saw my act, and unbooked me. Like, I would have been better off. I was better off not going on. Like, if I would have not gone on, I would have played the college.
That's right, you would have had a book. Yeah, you lost bookings because of it. Jesus.
But speaking of a great place I went to, Mongolia was one of the most fun places I've ever been to. It's like, it's the greatest country. Like freedom of speech is like 30 years old. So they love, they know comedy from American podcasts. So like they like.
So they don't know much about comedy.
And there's eight comics in the whole country. They brought me in, the hottest women you've ever seen, other than my wife. These people are like, it's like 6'1" Asian girls. But I guess they said back in the day, Genghis Khan came in and killed all the ugly people or something and kept the good looking. I don't know what exactly happened. That's what they told me. But it's amazing. This guy, the Mongolian murderer, their national sport is wrestling. I mean, literally wrestling. And half the country lives in yurts. And they like live in these yurts and they watch Mongolia's Got Talent. That's like their TV. But this dude is a monster. He fought Jay Perrin. It was a good fight, good solid fight. But you could tell the Mongolian murderer was a fighter. you watch that fight?
Who, Aqualung? Are we talking about Aqualung?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, but didn't he lose his last fight?
I don't know, but he's looking.
Wasn't he going coming into this on a loss? I think he was. Because he was, you know, he was good, but I'm pretty sure he was coming off a loss on this one. But he looked good in this fight. I mean, you know, but yeah, Jay Perrin definitely seemed a bit outclassed in that one. But
the heavyweight, I didn't see the heavyweight.
It was a good fight.
Also in MMA news, Bubba Jenkins won in the PFL.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, buddy. I was going nuts for that one. Boy, he looked amazing. And you know what sucks? Okay, so they're doing the prop bets beforehand. They're showing you all the prop bets. And him by submission was plus 900.
Wow.
Okay. And I looked at my wife and I said, get me my phone. I think he's going to submit this guy. I swear to God. And they didn't have, because I use a different site than DraftKings, because DraftKings doesn't work in California. So yeah. I use one of those offshore sites. And so I was, and they didn't have PFL on their app. And so I wasn't able to bet it. And then he submitted him. I was like, I fucking knew it. God damn it. I knew he was going to submit it.
And the thing about Bubba is Bubba's always been, let's say, I wouldn't say a slow learner, but he doesn't always, he's one of these guys, it takes him a while to adapt. In high school, he was like a state champion. Then he got a blowjob on the bus going to school, he said, and had to sit out his senior year or something happened. In college, he went to Penn State.
Two words, worth it. Okay.
And Penn State, like Penn State, they kicked him off the team. Cale Sanderson kicked him off the team. And then he goes out, does like a redshirt year at ASU, beats David Taylor, who at this point is like the best in the world right now.
Right.
I mean, then in Bellator, he sort of, you know, kind of ran into some issues, didn't really, but like.
He wasn't ready for MMA when he went into Bellator. But
he beat good guys at Bellator. He just couldn't seem to get past Georgie Karakanyan. And he went from camp to camp to camp. PFL last year, he looked great against Lance. And then he fucked up the next couple of fights. It seems like now he's divorced Bubba. He's motivated Bubba. He's ready. And what I was worried about was he was going to fight Chris Wade in the finals because Chris Wade beat him out last year. Did knock him out, but just beat him like beat him.
Or knocked him out of the tournament, is what I'm saying.
Right. And then Chris Wade, who is an amazing wrestler, decides not to wrestle in the last fight for some reason. Yeah. And now it's Bubba against Brandon, what's his name? Fuck the guy's name up. I don't have it in the
I don't remember, but Loft name.
But Bubba,
the British guy.
Yeah, if Bubba uses his wrestling, which he needs to, which he should, he should get that $1 million. If he decides to be a striker, and which he's a good striker, that's I think gonna.
He's a good striker, which that's really the difference. His striking has finally at least gotten up to a level to where he can compete with pretty much anyone. And that was always the problem. He had the wrestling, he had no striking. He had to learn from scratch. He was a base level striker who was getting beat, and that was the way to beat him. Now his striking has really come up, but this, he cannot try and beat Loughnane with striking because the fact of the matter is Loughnane is tougher than Bubba when it comes to getting punched in the face.
I don't know about that.
His nose is by his ear.
Doesn't
this
matter.
Guy This guy is a tougher striker than Bubba, but if Bubba can get in close and make it scrappy, tight, get him on the ground, wrestling.
That's the thing.
That's what I'm saying. He's not going to win a striking fight. Bubba needs to get him on the ground, out-wrestle him, and strike him, and submit him, probably just like he did this last guy.
Forget about the fans. They're going to boo. Because if Bubba wins the fight, like, he get the $1 million, hold him down, and have everyone in MSG boo the fuck out of you. It does get the million, Bubba. I mean, no one will spend it in a week anyway. On like, who knows what he's going to spend it on
condoms and Plan B.
Yeah,
that's what he.
Why would we need condoms if you use Plan B?
Because you start with the condoms, then you're like, ah, fuck this guy.
But Bubba, have him boo you out of MSG. Get the fucking million. We'll celebrate. Okay. Now, Kayla Harrison is on her way to getting her third $1 million. Like, it's becoming unfair. They should almost let two girls fight her at once. Or, I mean, she's fighting a tough girl. This next girl's pretty tough, but Kayla is just a monster. I mean, she's a two-time Olympic gold judo champion. She's been through the ringer. She's got two kids now, adopted her sister's kids. Her life has been completely fucked up as far as.
Hey, like, what happened with her sister? I want to know that. Do you know what happened?
I don't know. I know that she got custody of her sister's kids. That's all I know. I don't want
to. Because at one point, because they were doing the little behind the scenes thing with her, and they took her to the Olympic place where she won her gold medal. And she was like, my dad was alive. My sister was still my sister. I was like, what does that mean?
Maybe drugs change people. That's what I'm.
Yeah. Maybe she's in jail. I don't know.
Right. Maybe she's in jail.
I wasn't sure what that meant. I was like, ooh, some shit went down right there. That's what I know.
By her coach molested her, who's in jail now. She had a fucking crazy life. And all through that, the girl has persevered. And good for her. Get the $3 million. I don't know how this company's not bankrupt. They don't advertise. They pay everyone. They hire the best people. They got all these celebrities endorsing them. They're giving all this money away. They're giving out millions of dollars to people who not one of them, if they walk into a room, anyone would recognize.
But the question is, are they paying them anything for the fights leading up to that $1 million?
Yes, they are. But they're also, I heard they gave... I heard they gave Pettis $1 million signing bonus. I can't confirm.
Right. Yeah.
I heard they gave Bruma a signing bonus for $1 million. Yeah. Like, anyone that they gave money to is lost and is out of the tournament. And anyone that they signed that like has been a complete bust for them. So, I mean, Jeremy, I don't know what they gave Jeremy Stevens. Look, but PFL, like, I love what they're doing. I don't know. Their marketing strategy is insane. Let's put on the fights at times and don't tell anyone when they are.
Yeah, I loved it because they were during the day, so I got to sit here and enjoy some afternoon fights. So I was very excited.
But if Bubba wasn't fighting, would you know it was on?
No. I mean, in fact, even with Bubba fighting, people had to tell me he was on. So it definitely wasn't something I was tracking very closely. They're clearly, I don't know if they're making a profit, but they got to be making enough to keep going. So somebody's dumping money into this.
Investors. They had Mark Burnett invest. They had they had like a lot of big time investors. But yeah, I mean, unless you know a person personally who's fighting, you don't know about the, like, that's kind of a weird strategy. It's like a bringer fight where if you have to bring the audience to watch you fight.
I love this Larissa Pacheco though, because what a striker. She reminds me of Cyborg in her prime. She has got power. And really though, I mean, Kayla's the one girl she's lost to. And I just don't know how anything's going to be any different in this second or third time they fought. I mean, Kayla, and although Kayla, listen, darling, Kayla, listen, I love you. I think you're amazing. And I was there for you at the end. She did that thing where you say you make big announcements and you expect the crowd to go wild. Holy she was like, because I'm the queen of fucking combat shit. And the audience was silent.
It was an angle.
They fucking, left her hanging so bad. Kayla, I'm there for you. I loved everything you said. I think you are the queen of combat. And I think you're going to dominate this shit. And I think you're going to keep going. I think you're going to dominate the UFC next. That's what I think. World needs to watch out. Kayla Harrison put the world on notice.
The problem is she can't make 35. And I stood next to her. She's a bigger girl. She cuts 45. So she would dominate right now at 45, because the only person that would give her a fight, I think, would be Nunez, and they train together. and the gym, and she stayed at the gym, and Nunez left. So it seems like Kayla probably got the best of her, because usually the girl that's winning doesn't leave the gym. So, you know.
Well, what does that say? It sounds like they're destined to meet on a mat somewhere. So
yeah,
I like it. But Larissa does have a, talk about puncher's chance. I mean, she has power, and she's very angry about losing to Kayla before.
Kayla's
she's
not
very
a moron,
hungry.
Though.
She wants
she's
the money.
Not a moron.
I know, but
she's not going to be do it. Not that Ronda Rousey's the moron, but her coaches were they like, hey, she could beat Olympic level boxers right now. No, she can't. And don't tell her that. And don't praise her when she's doing it. You know, these people, they forget where they came from.
Well, and I feel like a lot of these girls just aren't used to being hit that hard in the face by another woman. And Pacheco hits like a man. She I does. Mean, when Kayla's she hits, it knocks them yeah. straight back
Kayla,
on their ass.
Might get hit once. She's going to get her against the cage. She's going to take her down, beat the fuck out of her, and get $3 million, I think. Now, Mike Perry.
Listen, with all likelihood, but I got to say, of all these finals, that is the final I want to see the most.
Did you watch the – I want to see Bubba. Did you watch the Mike Perry fight?
I want to see Bubba the most. You know what? Bubba the most, but the Kayla Harrison fight, I'm very interested to see how this works out with this Pacheco girl. I think this is a great matchup. I love this fight. But you're right, Bubba, obviously, number one. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Did you watch the Mike Perry fight?
I did not.
So Mike Perry did bare-knuckle boxing against MVP, right?
I was going to say, I'm sorry, I don't have a Bum Fights app
Yeah, right. So he fought MVP, right, from Bellator in bare-knuckle boxing. So
what happened to MVP? How did he wind up down there? Jesus Christ.
No, Bellator has a thing where they let you stay in Bellator and do bare-knuckle boxing. They cross-promote somehow. And they – so Mike Perry goes – the guy goes, it's the fight – that you didn't know you wanted. And I go, all right, that's exactly, you're absolutely right.
Good point.
So Mike Perry knocks him down in the first round, right? And you could tell, like, MVP gets up, but still kind of does well. It was probably a 10-8 round because of the knockdown. But the next four rounds, MVP dominated. I mean, like, Perry was going forward, but clearly MVP was a better fighter. Like, he was just getting punching more. And then they go on with it. Then they declare it five rounds. They got a draw. So they got one more round, right? Which I don't know how it was a draw, but I like Mike Perry and I was rooting for him and it was tougher. But Mike Perry's jaw was like this. Like his jaw was off his face. And his nose was busted. He's bleeding everywhere. And
I can tell you how it was a draw because maybe it's not an entirely legitimate sport. Maybe they don't
give a fuck. It was in England, though. Like,
yes, that makes it better. You're right.
MVP's
they've never done
England,
anything.
Though. So if you're going to have British judges, you would assume they would go. So then it goes one more round. They go in a draw. It's sudden death, right? One more round. And maybe Mike Perry won that last round. Maybe. It was very close. They gave it to Mike Perry. So Mike Perry beat MVP in bare knuckle boxing.
Honestly, though, the type of fighter that Mike Perry is, bare knuckle boxing is perfect for him. Because more than anything, more than technique, more than training, more than anything, he's a badass.
Right.
He's a badass. That his greatest trait is being a badass. And so for guys like that, bare knuckle is the place to be.
And he's like
MVP on the other hand has no business being down there.
Well, yeah, I mean it was crazy. So then all right, and then we didn't have a podcast last week, so we'll go over the two fights, the Nate the Train fight, which was talking about a badass. That dude, like, you have to kill that guy to get to
be
I mean, you literally have to shoot him in the head, and at that point he probably still will move forward. But yeah, he kept celebrating. He also let
he ended out. The fight himself three times. Let me tell you my story. This is how. Okay, so I walk into the casino again. Now it's afternoon fights. Did not expect it to be afternoon fights. I thought they were going to be the evening. I realized I missed everything, all my betting opportunities, and I'm like, oh fuck! And I see that the Nate train, I mean, is about to begin, and he's a +285, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And I run over there and I throw money down, and I'm like, put this on Nate, and the woman's looking at me going, who's Nate? I'm like, Nate the Train, Nate that guy right there, Nate, and she's like, oh, Landward, labor. So she finds him, puts the money down on him. And then, and you know, the first round, I was like, God. Come on, Nate, pull it together, man. You're going to cost me money here. Yeah, and yeah. Then in the second round, I'm like, yes, Nate the Train, Nate the. But then in the third, he starts, you know, calling the fight himself. And I'm watching the ref going, where the fight's not over. Where are you going? And I'm yelling in the casino. I'm like, the fight's not over.
He's in a full mouth. And he just stands him up with 30 seconds to make it more entertaining for the crowd. Like,
so, and then almost lost, almost got knocked the fuck out after that. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
That was the fun. Dude, I was laughing. I was laughing that. And I was laughing at the Rockhold fight because it was like watching a movie, Nate the Train. Then at the end of the fight, when he wins, okay, he always speaks in the third person of like, Nate the Train, but he has a whole like pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And he goes, where's my wife at? Where's my wife? And they just cut away. He takes the mic, Cormier, and just walks away from him. And he's like, where's my wife? Like, he thought it was going to be like, yo, Adrian, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, his wife was probably like embarrassed, like hiding. Like, this is like,
I've never seen a 3-knockout fight go to a decision before.
Dude, that was a great fight on both ends.
It was, but it was just so dumb. Just finish the fight. Wait till the ref calls you off. Don't be like, boom, did it. And then we saw it again this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Which fight? In the early prelims.
Right.
Where's this guy? Was it Amir Albizi? Was it Albazi?
It was Saldana. Saldana.
Was that the one?
Saldana, okay, yeah. He fought the guy that used to be a heavyweight.
The Saldana Woodson thing. Woodson, Jesus, dude, that fucking
guy. Great, but yeah, it was like boxing. People have to know it's not boxing. When you get a knockdown, you don't cheer. There's no 10-second rule. I think he was barring too much boxing. And then he kept like...
He jumped on the cage! Jumped on the cage, arms up!
Well, after he kneed him in the head.
After he knees him in the head. First, he celebrates. He's like, fight's over, I won. And he's like, no, it's not fucking over. Get in there and fight. And then so Woodson's getting up. He knees him in the fucking face.
Oh my
knocks
God.
Him out, basically. Yeah. Then jumps on the cage like, I did it. And he's like, you just lost a point, dummy. Yeah. Get off the cage. He's recovered. And then he goes from winning to losing a point. That was I was like, this fucking idiot. And then, of course, he wins on a split decision because of that crap. What a dummy, dude. Fight to the end of the fight.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Declaring yourself the winner. Oh, my God.
That was so entertaining, though. I mean, that fight should have been in Florida. That's how fucking bizarre it was. That was crazy. The Dominic Cruz fight. I thought Cruz looked pretty good. I thought he was, he looked fine. He looked good. It was a 3-round fight. He might have won, maybe won one and three, but he just got caught. I mean, it's just one of those things where speed is the first to go, power is the last, and maybe he lost a step. And the things that he used to be able to get away with, he can't get away with anymore. And
I just felt like, okay, it was a typical Dominic Cruz fight now, which is at the beginning, he's cagey and everything else. But then around round 2.5, the guy starts to catch up with him and he begins to lose some steam. And by round 3, the whole thing flips. If Cruz doesn't win in the first 1.5 rounds, he's not going to win because he's old. He's an old man. And he's out there and he just doesn't have it, man. He's another guy that should have fucking retired after that fight.
It's hard. It's hard to see like my favorite guys because, like, I mean, look, my favorite guys in the sport are Don Fry, like the OGs, the guys like there's nothing. Those guys were real characters. They fought for, they weren't getting paid much, or they weren't. It was a whole different type of fighting when they went into it. It was like those are the Tank Abbott, Don Fry, the Mark Kerrs, the Josh Barnetts, the Gracies. It was almost like they were comic book characters in a lot of ways. But then there's like the next crop of like the Urias and the Cruises and the
The great.
Well, what did you say? All right, that was the great what?
There he is. He's back.
I said the Gracies got paid for it more than anybody.
Yeah, the Gracies, right. But the next crop, and they're now old, is like that next level of like the favor. And that's what's kind of sad, because not that I can't relate to the newer crop, but they're still like, maybe the sport's getting too big. It's just too many people and too this and too that. It's like, it's hard to like really, it just seemed like there was less fights back in the day. So the guys were bigger and they were And now it's like, but yeah, to watch the guys like Rockhold and Dominick Cruz get old is like, what did you think of the Rockhold fight, Don?
I didn't see the Rockhold fight. Sorry. I watched the freebies on ESPN, and then I didn't do the pay-per-view. It didn't interest me, you know, because I knew Usman was going to kill
Leon Edwards,
yeah, which he did for 4.5 rounds.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, the first round, Leon won.
That's true. You know, the thing about it is, you're right, the first round definitely, but the thing about it was, you know, what I watched online and stuff after the free ones too, because the fact of the matter is this card, I felt like they were having a trouble selling it, because I've never gotten so many fucking promo offers for pay-per-view ever in my life than I did. There's like, you sure you don't want to get it? What if we gave it 20% off? And it's like, because the card, you look at the card and it's like, yeah, only the top fight is a draw, is something you want to pay to see. The rest of the card, I felt like all these fights that should have made up that main card, they've been turning into the main events on their fight nights. So you wound up with a card that I really had zero interest in paying to see.
The problem is that Usman isn't a huge draw. Like, even as great as he is, people like don't get that excited to watch him.
Not unless he's fighting Covington, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like he needs that other guy, that like the B-side, and then Leon Edwards is from England. People don't really know him that well. He hadn't fought.
Not at all, exactly.
Yada yada yada. But now, Don, yeah, no,
there was, you know, whose fault? Wait, but whose fault is that?
That's the UFC.
That's the UFC's fault. Yeah, because they don't want their fucking fighters to get bigger than the promotion. You know, they don't want to sell the fighters, and so it's completely their fault. They need to step back, and they need to invest in their fighters. They need to promote these guys.
Okay. I think they just have too many events. I mean, these fight nights, all those headlining matches in the fight nights are the fights that would have made great main card fights. You know, if you look at but they're turning them into fight night headliner matches instead of saving them to make an incredible card. It used to be, you know, some of these cards were just incredibly good fights you want to see straight online. This one, I really didn't. They were dragging out old names, Jose Aldo, Luke Rockhold, like anything to put some name value on this fucking card. And I'm like, this is your fault. You've watered down your product with too many events. Thank you, William Morris Endeavor. And speaking of WME,
right,
it's got to piss you off to see them pushing this nosebleed show like it's the only show they've ever created, because you know those guys must be rep by WME because they put none of this promo into your UFC comedy show. But then they're just going back and watching old clips and doing a standard commentary show. And they got fucking billboards all over LA for this shit. I mean, that really upsets me, man. That really does in their push. You go on their website, it's like, hey, have you seen nosebleeds? It's gone these guys. I don't know. It bothers me. I'm like, these guys must be rep by WME, because there's no reason for them to push that show that hard. And it's a YouTube show.
It goes deeper than that. And I'll talk about that off the air.
Wait a second. What about this fucking Gronkowski bullshit? You know, what about this fucking bullshit? They got a fucking football player and his family, you know, they're putting this guy over instead of the fucking fighters. They could have had 7 or 8 fighters that nobody knows about. They could have been promoting these guys instead. They got a fucking football player family. I mean, great. The guy, Dana White's a big fan of this guy. Good for him. Good. But do it on your own damn time. You know, William Morris Endeavor has taken a shit on the promotion level of their fighters, their clients, or what have you. They are doing nothing for, you know, to want me to sign with William Morris if I was an actor, you know.
It's typical of what happens. You build up an incredible product, then Hollywood comes calling and they ruin it. That's pretty much the way it goes.
I would pay a subscription to watch Don Fry watching the fights. That would, if Don Fry was watching the fights with a couple beers in him, it would be must watch.
We got to start doing that. We got to start creating that.
It would be must watch television.
Yeah, we'll create it. We'll do a live feed on like Instagram Live, and we'll put up a Venmo and be like,
yeah, you know what? We actually, Stuart Wilson and I, Stuart Wilson is a stunt guy out of Hollywood. He's a buddy of mine. We've been buddies for a decade, I guess. I don't know. And we went and met with the UFC, their fight channel, you know, about doing something. And we brought that up. You know, we gave them seven fucking ideas, you know. We came in there with seven ideas for these guys. And so I don't know where it's at right now, you know, because they don't start their new. Can you all see me?
No,
not right now.
God damn it. Something took a crap. I'm going to have to leave and come back on.
It's all right. We can hear you just fine. Yeah, so, fine. I mean, that's good. Yeah. Oh, there, you're back now. Now we can see it. Yeah.
God dang it. But yeah, these guys are they're really cool guys. They're really good guys. And I enjoyed meeting them, and Seward did too. But, you come at them with ideas, but they can't do anything until the new fiscal year, you know? and then you hope William Morris is going to say, hey, that's a great idea. This guy can actually put a sentence together, and he can speak, and he's got ideas, and we're going to promote this, and we're going to make some money off of this, and we're also going to promote our show. Because here's the thing. If I was William Morris Endeavor, I would have half of my fighters in a movie for somebody, because that way they would get a SAG contract. They would get SAG health benefits, pensions? You know.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I mean, the movie could do your health benefits for you, you know, and protect your fighters for you.
Yeah, you know, I'm on SAG Health. I'm on SAG Health insurance.
I used to be. I was on SAG Health for like 10 or 12 years until I had that stroke and I couldn't qualify the following year. And then, boom, they dropped me.
They drop you as fast as they can, too. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
they dropped me once, and then I got it back. So, but it's like, oh, sorry, didn't make it on time. That's it.
Don Gregg. So a couple of weeks ago, before I'll change the topic a little bit before I –
Well, I'm just saying that William Morris could be, or the UFC could be helping these guys out with physical, with the physical benefits, you know, through SAG.
I completely agree. They could do all kinds of stuff with it. And that's what I'm trying to do with MMA, with UFC Comedy Jam. It's basically give fighters a chance to show a different side of them, be funny. You know how many people told me, dude, I never liked this guy until I watched him. You know, Frank Yeager was hilarious and Cejudo was amazing and this and that one, you know, as opposed to other stuff. Anyway, so before I left for the cruise, I took my daughter to the Sparks game. So I get the free Sparks tickets, right? Which at this point is the worst team in the league, especially since their player divorced the team, that you're allowed to divorce the team.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they have an MC there, and the MC goes, everyone stand up. And they're like, nobody sits till they score their first basket. And I look at my buddy, I'm like, we're not going to be here for 2 weeks.
I wish I wore comfortable shoes because we're going to be standing for a while.
So that was on Thursday. Then Friday, I took my daughter and wife to go see Smokey Robinson at the OC State Fair, who is 82 years old, puts on an incredible show. Like, it's just hit after hit. And, you know, the guy wrote My
Girl. Well, his body's 82. His face is 55.
But this dude wrote My Girl. He wrote, like, I mean, they don't make him like Smokey Robinson anymore. Was the most. And my daughter.
The guy can still sing.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's 82, but he can still sing.
Still sing and dance and the whole thing. Right. That was Friday.
Yeah, great.
It was amazing. And my daughter was yelling, well, what should we tell Smokey? Like, she was screaming. We were all the way, like, she thought he could hear us. then Saturday, I open for Russell Peters, right, at the Microsoft Theater. 6,000 people. Like, fucking packed. And I wasn't even nervous, Greg, because I'm like, look, even if half the crowd laughs, that's still 3,000 people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm more nervous if like there's 20 people, like, and 10 people laugh. It sounds like 10 people. But man, it was Laughlin Patterson opened up because I thought I was going to have to go on cold. And I was like, but I went on and I just, dude, it was amazing. It was like higher than any drug. It was just like, and then Russell went on after me and fucking killed, did an hour and a half of new shit that I'd never heard. And
he saved the show.
Yeah, he saved the show. I took my wife and kid. That was like probably one of the best experiences I've ever had as a comic, man. Like it was, I never thought I'd play the Microsoft Theater. So that was awesome. And then Sunday I took my kid to Disneyland, which Disneyland is just, you just basically wait an hour and a half on every line with other miserable parents.
There's entertainment. There's entertainment because they have the fights. They have fights in between the rides. Come on.
That and then every character.
There's more fights. There's more fights, exciting fights going on there than are on the UFC shows.
Dude, and then every character now is making sure to say hi to every kid. Because now they were like saying like,
oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. No, they got in trouble for the ignoring the black kids.
So then I had a show for rabbis. Right. I got Scott Baio got me. He's friends with a bunch of rabbis. And it was.
Is he Jewish?
No,
but I didn't think so. He's an Italian, right?
Very conservative rabbis, right? So they hired me to. The rabbis were roasting each other, and I did comedy before that, right? Which, by the way, a rabbi roast goes on way too long because they don't just roast you. It's like a whole like service with a roast in between. It was like a typical, you know. And I, there was some women there, and I called them the Real Housewives of Jerusalem. And I was just, it was just one of those. But that actually went pretty well. I had to be super clean. And then the cruises have been good. Although one lady, so I did, you know, 4,000 people came to the shows over the hands. Two people complained. Of course, I heard about it because I do a joke about how I was at a porta potty with my kid and it was just pee everywhere. So I'm like holding her up, my daughter, thinking that she'll like pee in the thing. Of course, she pees all over me. And R. Kelly was playing. So a woman got... told that she goes, I got offended by his R. Kelly kid joke about his, and I'm like, well, get mad at R. Kelly. What the fuck you want from me? You know? But of course, you know, 200 people laugh and two get mad. And then that's what I fucking focus on. And then as far as, and then there was a, I did a show for, it's like, for some reason on this cruise, it's the Black Line Dancing Club. So it's all, it's like 600 blind people that are all line dancing, like from different towns and they like wherever you go, just line dancing.
Wait, did you did you see the Black Line Dancing or Black Blind Dancing?
No, line dancing.
Line dancing. Oh. But don't worry, next week he's going to the White Breakdancing Convention. So it's all going to even
Black Blind Line Dancing. Yes.
So like you think you're online for like except like food, and all of a sudden everyone starts breaking out and doing these fucking line dancing. So I went to the club. I just stepped in.
Line dancing's fun. I'm not gonna lie. Listen, line dancing is a good time.
Dude, I went to the club.
Now two to the left. Now kick to the right. Now work it on down. Now break it on up. I love it. It's fun.
It's like I go to the nightclub. It's like 300 black people.
It's right? Like stealing hubcaps.
And then and like the middle of it, there's the guy in charge of the line dancing. So he's going like this way.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking at him and following whatever this guy does. He's like the Pied Piper.
So, sure.
So like, then this woman comes to my show, right? And she's like, hey, you were really funny, man. You talk about your daughter. She's 3. Wait till she turns 16. She's going to be out of control like mine. I'm like, oh, okay. I go, what do you do for work? She goes up there. She starts freaking me, right? Like putting her butt in. Like, and I'm like, this is like at the piano bar. Starts putting her butt on. She's like, my husband.
Can't have that.
Because my husband told me to do that, right? And she tells me her daughter is out of control. And I was like, oh, what do you do for work? She goes, I suck his dick.
Hey, it's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, is your daughter taking up after you?
Yeah, like of course, she's out of control. Like she told me she's sucking dick for work.
I know, and you're like, let me just go to the ATM.
So that was what I've been doing.
Well, what's your best move, sweetheart?
Yeah.
And of course, like, they put my cabin right above the nightclub, right? So every every night I hear boom, my fucking bed is moving. It's like, I can't, dude. And I had an audition for a Michael Rapaport TV show, right? 9 pages. So I had to do that. I had to do that on the cruise. So it's just been a, you know, that's been my life the last 2 weeks. So I just wanted to let you know how I'm doing.
Wait, who's your agent?
Joseph Greenberg is my manager.
William Morris doesn't represent you.
Do you have a manager getting you out, Don?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Do you want one?
Yeah, I need one. Yeah.
All right, send me your picks.
As long as you
send me your reel, my picks. For real.
I don't have a reel.
Yeah, you do.
I don't have a reel.
He has a legend.
You don't just cut up like scenes from the Godzilla stuff. Cut up scenes from your Priceline commercial. Cut up scenes from your movies. Put them together, because what's going to happen is an audition is going to come in, and then they're going to go, and then the manager will submit your picture and then also your reel, and then they'll watch it and go, this guy's fucking great. But they're not just going to like, oh shit, I know him from, they might, some of them might, but a lot of them won't.
So I was in Vegas for a week, which, you know, this is my first time doing a full week in Vegas since the heart thing.
Yeah.
And so I had to keep the brakes on a lot more than ever before, which was really hard. I did pretty good. I got to be honest. I came back in better condition than I've ever come back from a week in Vegas. But I also had some of the best shows I've ever had in my life in Vegas. And one of them, I'm on stage and these people say they're from Canada. And I start talking about how in Canada, they don't have paper dollars. They have $1 coins and $2 coins. So when you go to the strip club, you can't, you know, got to throw coins at them like they're a fountain. And this girl's like, oh, this girl, I used to be, the mom is like, she used to be a stripper. And she's like, yeah, and one of the strippers used to put a shot glass in her butt. You had to throw it into, you know, and score it into her cheeks. And I'm like, oh, we have to do this. And so, yes. And so I brought her on stage.
No.
I did. And the video is up right now on my Instagram at Greg Romero Wilson. Go right now and you will see me throwing quarters into this girl's butthole on stage.
By the way, Greg,
at the LA Comedy Club in Las Vegas.
I love you putting up your stuff, by the way, because I've been doing the same thing. It's like,
yeah,
put up minute. Dude, that happened last night. Not as crazy as you, but there was a mother there and a daughter and this and that. And the woman was like, girl's 25, birthday. I was calling them the Real Housewives of Paxil because they wouldn't stop fucking talking, you know? And then she's like, the mom who's like 50 something. She goes, you want this sweet ass? I go, yeah, okay. And then she gets up and starts twerking. Like her ass bending over, huge ass. I mean, like Yokozuna kind of, not that big, but like a big ass, right?
Can I ask, what color was this gal?
White. Okay.
Wow.
So then I looked at her, and I go, I think I just got monkeypox.
Yeah.
Nice.
She got beat up with a bag of quarters. Yeah.
Dude, but this is the stuff. This is why people need to go see live comedy, because live comedy versus just seeing clips and stuff. I mean, you don't get to experience
it. No,
of course not. When you get to experience it, it is so much bigger and so much more fun than you could ever imagine, more than you could ever find on YouTube it just isn't the same. Watching a special on Netflix, watching it on Broadway, you're not getting the experience of live comedy. You got to get out to your club. And you got to see comedy live.
Especially comics like me and you, because we do a lot with the crowd. And you know, like I always said, like, look, there's comics out there that like Todd Barry. Todd Barry is a great writer and a great comedian. But in the room, it's like everything is kind of scripted and he doesn't go off track. And it's funny. It kills. But on TV, it looks fucking amazing because the writing is so good.
Yeah.
Ian Bagg is a guy who every fucking show is in 5,000 different places. It's the most brilliant shit you've ever seen. It doesn't translate as much there on TV as Todd Barry. But I have a much better time at Ian Bagg show than a Todd Barry show.
Absolutely.
But watching it, you're like, Okay.
Stronger writers work better on television and video and streaming, and then stronger performers, you know, you can really feel them in the room and they're going to blow those guys out of the water. It's just a different experience, and people just need to go back to the comedy clubs and feel it, enjoy themselves, and enjoy what it's like to really laugh your fucking ass off, to hurt from laughing. They, you know, we got to get that, bring that back.
Yeah, but you can't. But you can't. You can't do that anymore without offending somebody.
No, you can.
Because you laughed at something that offended me, and I was upset, and I went home and I peed my bed, you know, because I just couldn't contain the sorrow that was.
Well, more and more comedy clubs now are having announcements saying, "Listen, you know, you're going to be offended. If you're easily offended, this is not the show for you."
Yeah, get the fuck out. Get the fuck out. Stay home. Stay home.
You know. So, Greg, what do you got coming up?
This weekend, I will be in El Paso at the El Paso Comic Strip, Thursday through Sunday. So join me there. That's what's up.
Don, what do you got?
Oh, wait. Sorry, Don, really quickly. One other thing. Ahead. September 16th, 17th. September 6th is it's a brand new festival. The Just Another Comedy Fest in Flagstaff, Arizona, the Orpheum Theater. I am the inaugural first up headliner on September 16th. So if you're in Arizona, my friends down in Tucson, my friends in Phoenix, come on up to Flagstaff. We're going to be partying all weekend.
Uh-oh. That sounds like a challenge to me.
It is, Don.
It is. So wow. It is.
Looks like I'm going to Flagstaff. Hey.
September 16th. Come on up.
September 16th.
Don, what do you got?
I'm just stealing hubcaps at the comedy show in Flagstaff. You know, while everybody's in there laughing at Greg Wilson. Him and I cut the profits, you know.
That's right. In fact, that's where I make most of my money.
Yeah. I steal batteries and hubcaps, and then you know, we cut it.
Yeah. We split it real good. What are you doing?
What do you have going on?
I'm going to be in Dallas this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the House of Comedy in Dallas, Texas. And then I'm in Las Vegas at the Tropicana Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at the Trop. If you're in LA, Pinned, my show has got it actually won at the real comedy festival, the real
Housewives of Comedy,
independent
festival.
Real comedy festival, and it's going to be screening at the LA Live at the at next Saturday night at the LA Live at the Hollywood Real Independent Film Festival.
And you won't be there,
and I will be there. Saturday,
you will be there.
I will be there. Good. I will be there. Yeah. Good. So thank you guys so much. Love you guys. See you guys soon. You're the best.